Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening from Fort Lauderdale. This is Stonewall Live, the best of GLBT book, film, and media talk on Blog Talk Radio. Hey, do you want to know a lot? Are you confused about the Oscars? I am. Like, there's like so many things people are nominated for. I've been hearing Oscar, 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 and so I've got film critic Ruben Rosario with me live. And if you go to livestream.com/StonewallLive with three L's, you can see us live in our little studio with our little Stonewall Live banner up on the window. And Ruben and I are going to talk tonight about the Oscars. Ruben, hello.
Hello, Nate. How are you?
I'm perfect. We just had a great dinner. My partner cooked dinner.
It was delicious.
It was the best.
Sweet potato rule.
Oh, sweet potatoes are great. I really love sweet potatoes. Okay. Turn it off, Ms. Gaga, there. Okay. So now let's talk, okay? Let me remind you, if you have any questions or comments for us, you can call us at 805-830-8355, which is a number now that I give out as my home number, which isn't my home number, and it's like the only number I can remember. Okay, Ruben.
Yes.
Are we going to have a silent film for the best picture of the year?
It looks like it might be the first silent film to win the Oscars since the very first Oscars. I did my research. Wings, which is a World War One, kind of like a romantic triangle, was the movie to win the very first Best Picture Oscar. And the year after that, they all started being talkies. So this looks like it's going to be the first film since the very first film.
Of course, we're talking about The Artist, a French film that just hit the art houses first by storm. I think it is now bled into the...
Somewhat. It hasn't made as much money as Mr. Harvey Weinstein would like, but he's handling the marketing side in terms of the promotion, in terms of the Oscars, very, very well. He's playing the Academy like a piano.
Right, right.
And yeah. I really wanted to hate it. I went into that screening and I started scribbling in my notebook. Oh my goodness, the way they use the film is not right. It's too much of a stunt. And in waltzes in Jean Dujardin, flashes his million-dollar smile, and I was, where have you been all my life?
Do you know what I was thinking during the whole movie? Do you remember the song in Sunset Boulevard, Just One Look?
Yeah, absolutely.
That was the smile.
Yeah?
That was the... He comes in and does this... I guess he just turns his head, and... Because you have to, of course, with silent movies, you have to be... very big in your emotions, and he just turns his head, and he does have, I swear there were like lights in his mouth.
Yeah, he cocks an eyebrow right there, you know, and he just flashes a smile, and it's like, you know, it's the sunshine goes right in, you know.
Can you imagine how hard it was to film that movie?
Yeah, it was probably a picnic.
Because everyone's used to talking. I mean, everyone in that movie has made a movie or been in a production and spoken. It's not like they've all been in silent movies.
Right. The director is Michel Hazanavicius. He's actually known for making James Bond spoofs called OSS 117 with the same two actors starring The Artist.
Right, right. I heard about that. I didn't remember which spoof. I remember it was like a Saturday Night Live or Second City type.
The actor started doing a comedy for French TV, but he actually, with the director, he actually made these two features.
Oh, they're feature films.
Yeah, feature films. OSS 117.
Okay, we'll have to look for those. That is great. Okay. So let's get away from Best Picture and leading actor and go to some of the real tight races, leading actress. I think that's going to be the tight race.
At this point, I thought that was going to be the Clash of the Titans this year, but looking like Viola Davis is pulling ahead.
Uh-huh.
I'll be very surprised if Meryl Streep, who was one of the front runner, would win. I really think Viola Davis is to lose. I really do.
Really? You think? Well, you know, the thing is, I always thought Viola Davis was going to win. Win. And then I just kind of saw some of these other people. There's been a lot of buzz about Glenn Close in Albert Nobbs and Meryl Streep in Iron Lady. I don't think Michelle Williams was that good.
I love Michelle Williams, but yes, this is actually a vote of confidence to Michelle. She was nominated before a couple times, once for Brokeback Mountain, supporting actress, and a couple of years ago, I think it was last year, for Blue Valentine.
And
the Academy loves her. She will win. It's just a matter of when. It's not going to be this year, though.
Okay. Yeah, it was a nod. It was a very good nod. Right. She's really young. Is that correct?
31.
31. That's too young. So you think it's going to be Viola Davis?
I really do.
Okay. What about leading actor? We've got...
That is the race for me. I really think...
Let's go over who's up. Everyone may not know that we're not all movie buffs.
Right.
Okay, so we've got Damien DeShera in The Better Life.
That was the surprise.
That was a surprise, but it's gotten very good reviews. George Clooney in The Descendants. That was kind of like a given because he acted his little heart out. Though I think it was not that much acting. John Jardine in The Artist. Gary Oldman in Tinker Tailor, Soldier Spy, and we'll talk about that in a minute. And Brad Pitt in Moneyball. Now, personally, I didn't think Brad Pitt was that good in Moneyball.
I really liked him. I really thought it was a star turn. He really captured the man's personality. He had a short fuse.
Right.
But there's that disenchantment with life that character has. And he really does bring that out. I really think it was a good, golden age old school performance that I really think was actually instrumental to the how good Moneyball was.
So who's gonna win?
I'm gonna flip a coin there. I mean, I could at this point. Dujardin was actually a bit of an underdog in the early days of the campaign, and then he picked up the Screen Actors Guild Award, and now all of a sudden he's the front runner. But don't rule out George Clooney,
George Clooney, yeah. I mean, he's won a few times before.
He's won once before for Syriana.
But he's been nominated many times.
He has been nominated several times. Right. He hasn't won for leading actor. This would be his first leading actor.
That's right. This is okay.
So who wins? Do your damn by a mustache. I don't know. What do you think?
I think by the skin of his gorgeous teeth.
Yeah.
By the skin of his beautiful teeth. That's a good one. Okay.
I'll be rooting for him, but don't rule out Gary Oldman. Everyone say he doesn't stand a chance. But the Academy wants a surprise.
That they want a surprise.
They do. Remember that you're the pianist one, best actor, and it's really gonna be Daniel Day-Lewis for Gangs of New York or Jack Nicholson for Bob Schmidt, and no, it was Adrian Brody.
Right, I remember that.
No one saw that coming.
Nobody.
And so I'm thinking Oldman, don't count Oldman out. Don't count him out.
Okay.
Yeah.
He's a great actor.
He's a fine actor. Very subtle performance. A 180-degree turn from his earlier performance last year playing the vampire hunter Red Riding Hood.
Red Riding Hood.
A truly awful film. And he really chewed the scenery.
Listen, we talked earlier about something that was in the Los Angeles Times this all week. Is that right? They're running something all week?
Absolutely. Los Angeles Times is doing this series about the Academy.
About
who is the Academy?
Who is the Academy?
Yeah.
A lot of people think that the Academy is made up of Lindsay Lohan, Ryan Seacrest, and the Kardashians.
No, not really.
No, I'm joking.
Yeah.
Tell us what you learned this week about who's voting for these people.
Okay.
You'll know why you're being surprised.
We pretty much had an idea that it's skewed older, that it's skewed Caucasian, and it's skewed male.
Uh-huh.
The statistics prove all that, but it's the level of statistics that's really just floored me, we've got the statistics say that 77% is male. We got the male quotient is 77%. 94% Caucasian. 94%.
94% white and mostly male.
Mostly male.
And how many under 40?
If memory serves correctly, it's 2%.
It's 2%. I saw that 2%? Today. You sent me the link. 2% under 40.
2%.
So, and how many have won Academy Awards in the past?
It was 14%.
Uh-huh.
19% nominated and hasn't won. And the rest of them are industry professionals who've never been nominated, never won.
Okay. So we've got a lot of old white men who are basically losers.
And losers with a solid industry connection. Yes.
Okay, losers. Now they're solid industry connections. They've never actually been nominated for the films that they are judging.
That's
in other
right.
words, it's not like the people on American Idol who are somewhat of that genre, right? Okay.
Right.
Yeah, they don't know what they're doing. Okay.
This is what's really, this is one of my pet peeves about the Oscars. I mean, I love the Oscars. I grew up with them. I love all that glamour. I love the looking at the costumes,
right.
Looking at the icons from another, for the golden age coming in.
Right.
I love all that. But everyone gets to vote on most of the categories, with the exception of foreign language film,
right.
Live action short, and documentary short,
uh-huh.
And animated short. They're actually, if you vote, you have to see all of them.
Right, you have to see all,
right.
all of them nominated.
Everything else, everyone can get to vote. It doesn't matter if you haven't
if
seen everything.
You've seen it, right.
And that really, that's actually a pet peeve of mine.
Right, because you don't know.
Yeah.
And you know they're
yeah.
not watching it. You know
right.
that if they're old white men.
They give it to the maid.
Either they
yeah.
give it to the maid or their niece or nephew, and they're voting basically a popularity contest or to hurt somebody they don't like.
Right.
The
case
them.
In point when Crash won over Brokeback Mountain.
Right,
you know?
Right.
Yeah.
Because these old white men didn't really want like Crash. They just didn't want Brokeback Mountain to win. I saw a funny, the airwaves and the blogs and the magazines have been filled with Oscar, pre-Oscar week. It's kind of like the Super Bowl for the artsy-fartsy crowd. And one of the things it said was there was a disproportionate thing about France. Of course, Midnight in Paris is set in France. Hugo is set in France. The Artist is set in France.
The Artist is set in Hollywood, but made by
French
people.
Yeah,
okay. People.
Yeah. That's right, of course. It's a solid movie, but it's a French film. I'm sorry, a French film. And then, of course, War Horse, where do they send them?
Most of it takes place in France.
Yeah, they send them to France. That's
right.
Where the front is in France. So is that incredible? For 1 year, did I miss anything? Hugo, Midnight in Paris.
Yeah.
I got all the Francophiles out there. Are they all happy?
Yeah, I hope they are.
What's up with that? Is that just a coincidence?
I'm thinking it is. All I can say is Jean Dujardin had me a bonjour.
He did. Well, that first of all, he's a beautiful man. And
he
it was
is.
A beautiful film. If you haven't seen The Artist, we'll
it's
talk.
A treat.
It's a treat. It's just fun. If you've got some bad weather up north, I hear you're getting a lot of bad weather and some great stuff. Perfect thing to go hide, get some popcorn, put on some woolen socks, and go see The Artist before Sunday, because you'll really understand what's going on when people are talking about it. What about Hugo? Let's talk about Hugo, okay?
Hugo is what I like to call Martin Scorsese's PSA about film preservation. That's a cynical way to put it. I like Hugo very much. My misgiving about Hugo is that here's the story of an orphan who is trying to escape this guard, so he is trying to avoid going to an orphanage.
Right.
So this would be, you would think this would be like a natural subject matter for Scorsese, whose movies are characterized by a sense of urgency.
Right, or
but,
dark.
Yeah, and I think he's soft-pedaled that. It's a genteel feel to the film. That it is appropriate for the subject matter, but I feel the sense of urgency is not there as
mm-hmm.
much as it should be. However, when the movie moves into the second half, when you actually find out what's really going on and what Scorsese's ultimate agenda is, then
right.
it's quite lovely. Then it's for film buffs, it's really is a treasure trove. It really is.
Right, and it's an animated or a computer.
It's well, there's a lot of CGI in it, but it's one of the big things about it is that it's Scorsese's first 3D movie.
It's a 3D movie.
And
right.
it's the great thing about it is that he treats the medium like a new toy, you know.
Right.
You can tell there's a real artist behind the camera, and it's not really, you know, it's about just flashing things in front of the screen. You
right.
know?
Right.
And this is just the very first shot of the film. For those of you who've seen the film, you actually know it's a long shot of Paris. Then the camera swoops down and goes inside this Grand Central Station.
Yeah.
And the camera swoops down. The right hand on the left hand side is the train. On the right hand side is the people who are about to board the train. And the camera just swoops in, you know. And then
yeah.
you know this is a real artist, you know.
Right. It's
and behind, yeah, yeah.
Yeah. And 3D is so much fun. And I, it seems like everything's in 3D because Star Wars just came out in 3D.
Yeah, Titanic's about to come out in 3D.
And something else is what else is coming out?
Titanic.
Titanic. That's
yeah.
right. Titanic's been redone. It's 3D. So I think it's fun. I really do. I think it's a hilarious medium. I have fun with it. It's a new way of getting, you know, technology is moving forward. We're watching movies on iPads. We're waiting for on-demand Netflix, Blockbuster online, all these programs, Xfinity with Comcast.
And here's the big irony is that, you know, be that as it may, the front runner for this year's Oscars is a movie that is shot in that square aspect ratio, 1:3:3:1.
Right.
In black and white, you know, with almost no audio. There's a couple. There's a little bit. They have an ambition, very playful with the audio.
Right.
And then the small instances where it appears in the artist.
Right.
But that's what looks like that's what's going to win.
Yeah, I think that, yeah. I think you're right. I think you're absolutely right. Okay, I want to talk about a couple of other movies.
Absolutely.
As you know, this year we had the English language version of The Girl with the Dragon Tattoo. And I think 2 years ago, was it 2 years ago or 3 years ago?
I mean, it was 2 years ago.
2 years ago, we had the foreign version with the subtitles.
That's right, Swedish.
Swedish, of course, yeah. Swedish, because it was Stig Larsson. Different actors, I did think they kind of looked alike, except Daniel Craig was a lot cuter than the other guy. But okay, but I'm gay, so it's okay. So, personally, I thought that the English language version was better in all aspects. I mean, I really felt it. It was smoother. It wasn't. I felt a little clunkiness with the Swedish, even though I had read the book and loved the book so much. I really liked the English version better. I know you and I disagree. What do you think about the two?
I think Fincher did a good job. Especially in terms of the dynamic between the Daniel Craig character and the lead character, Lisbeth Salander, who's played in the American version of Rooney Mara.
Uh-huh.
But in terms of the mystery, central mystery, I really think with lesser resources, the director of the Swedish version was able to make it, I think, more suspenseful. I will say this, it is a longer film.
Uh-huh.
Than the Swedish version, and it really doesn't feel that way. I think the editing is really, really accomplished.
Right.
It just feels very fluid.
It did feel fluid, yeah.
Absolutely.
It didn't seem, I think there was a lot more dark. I think the Swedish version, the lighting was a lot darker. Of course, Sweden probably doesn't have that much light. Of course, when the Americans filmed it, they went, oh, I can't deal with that. Of course, we live in Florida where it's like, you know, 10,000 watts.
But let's move on to one of the things I really like about the Girl with Dragon Tattoo, the American version,
okay.
Is Christopher Plummer, who has a small role in it.
Yeah.
And he just knocks it out of the park in this scene towards the end.
Yes.
And it's a great year for him. Who's so happy that he's the front runner. He's pretty much a lock to win for supporting actor for Beginners.
Right.
And I called this one. I saw Beginners back in like April or May, and I called it. It's like the first great performance I saw in 2011 was Christopher Plummer, and I'm so happy that that he's actually found the connection with audiences and the Academy.
What a great story.
I actually interviewed Mike Mills, the director of Beginners.
Oh, really?
I did.
Oh, my
God. I did. He's a really interesting guy.
Yeah.
He was worried about the gay community. He felt that he was letting us down by putting the emphasis in the film on the straight character, who's like the fictional version of himself.
Okay.
Yeah.
This is coming from a man. We come from different backgrounds.
Sure.
You're half my... You're old enough to be my son. You're only 3 years older than my son, by the way.
Okay.
So I have a straight son.
Mm-hmm.
So I came out to him much, or of course, a lot earlier and under different circumstances than this. But in my coming out, I was more worried about him and how he was reacting than I was about myself. So when I saw Beginners, I said, that's what happened. The focus, when you have a child, it's a completely different coming out story. It's night and day because you don't worry about what anyone else thinks. You might as well have a rainbow flag and feather boa walking down the street fucking naked. Because you can say that on there.
Oh, good. Okay.
Yeah, you can say anything you want. So, I mean, but I was so worried about introducing him to a boyfriend. What does he think I am? You know how you always worry about how he looks at you as effeminate or not, and that it was totally focused on him for like years, decades. I was worried about him and how he was going to react to everything. So when I saw the movie, I said, that's somebody captured the married, closeted, gay man, and that it is about the children. And that's something that people without children don't realize that you have this strange focus. And I did not feel, you know, the Christopher Plummer was brilliant, and the boyfriend, was that cute? That would love
guy from ER, Goran Vishnik.
You know what? When he first started on ER, that was my man crush. Mm-hmm. It, you know, I went from Greg Louganis to him. and he is from Bosnia, or?
I believe so. I'm not
100%. And he came over as a refugee during the Clinton years. Is that correct?
I believe so, yeah.
So he should be in his late 40s? Mid-40s?
Mid-40s.
Okay. He did a brilliant job. I'm surprised he wasn't nominated. He had a kind of small role,
right,
though. It's a small role. But the movie really, Christopher Plummer was fabulous in this movie. And if you haven't seen Beginners, I'll just go over really quick.
Yeah, just rent this out on DVD or Blu-ray. Well, one more thing about Beginners. If Plummer wins, which he probably will, that would make him the oldest supporting actor winner ever at 82 years old.
82, God.
Yeah.
You know, he doesn't look 82.
He does not.
He moves around very spry. For those of you who don't know what Beginners is about, it's a gentleman with who's in his twilight years. He's come out of the closet to his younger his son,
who's played by
Ewan McGregor, another hottie.
That's right.
Who is having a lot of trouble with his relationships with women, and he is watching his aging, dying father. His father's dying of a terminal illness, with his loving relationship with a younger man about his own age or about supposed to be. And it's just, the story just grabs you. It's a beautiful, beautiful story. And Beginner, and just you know, get a hold of it really quickly. All right, we got more to talk about. We've
only got
eight and a half minutes left. Okay, let's go on to the most nominated director in the history of the Academy, of course, is Woody Allen.
That's right.
I don't know. He's never shown up. Of course, he's not going to show up.
He actually showed up in 2002. Because of 9/11, they did a special New York segment of the Oscar. That was the Your Beautiful Mind one.
Right.
But he actually does not show up. He is probably going to be playing with his jazz band. He doesn't really care if he wins. He probably will for a screenplay.
Right.
Original screenplay. He doesn't really, he doesn't really.
Right.
Do award right. shows, yeah.
We're talking about Midnight in Paris.
That's right.
It is already out in DVD. It's already out in
America. I liked it okay. It's not my favorite
Woody
Allen. But it's got a great supporting cast of lesser-known people who are really wonderful in it.
I think everybody was good in it.
The actor who played Dennis Hemingway, I forget his name, is actually quite the scene stealer. You know, I think you're going to be seeing a lot more of him.
I thought it was a nice movie, but I don't think it was his best.
No.
It wasn't in Annie Hall. It wasn't
It does have a beautiful opening. It's just montage of pictures of Paris.
Right.
Modern-day Paris.
Right.
With a jazz tune.
Right.
And it just feels right.
Right,
I kind of wish that film had that graceful note to it the entire way. It doesn't, but I just love that beginning.
It was cute. All right, let's talk about My Week with Marilyn. It had a huge buzz, of course, because of the story. There hasn't been a Marilyn Monroe movie made in a long time. There was a rash, of course, after she died, and it's been kind of a long, long period. It's a beautiful story. It's a story of the Prince and the Showgirl.
Yes, the making of Prince and the Showgirl is based on the memoirs of this a young man who was working behind the scenes, and he actually develops a bond with Marilyn during those few days that he spent shooting the film.
Right.
It's directed by Richard Curtis, who is the screenwriter of Four Weddings and a Funeral, and the director of Love Actually. And it's actually a pleasant film. I wasn't wowed by it, but it actually gets more interesting as it goes along.
And her makeup was amazing.
Yeah, I think she lacks the voluptuousness of Marilyn. She's more of a waif. But she really gets into the psyche of Marilyn, and this is why I like her performance.
Right. It seemed like she had the posture and stuff like that. Marilyn, by the way, was a size 12. Did you know that?
No. I know she wasn't very tall.
She wasn't very tall, but she wore a size 12.
Wow.
Which is, for those drag people who aren't drag queens or males out there, it's a little hefty.
Yeah.
If you saw Marilyn Monroe today, you would send her to the gym.
Now, another Michelle Williams movie I love, and I think that's a good segue to the movies that were snubbed this year, uh-huh. was Meek's Cutoff, which is a Western shot, like The Artist, in the 1:3:3 aspect ratio.
Uh-huh.
It's a film that is actually more about the aesthetic. It's about this pilgrims and this is like in mid-19th century Oregon. They're lost in the Oregon Trail. Now, their tracker is a real historical character. His last name is Meek. And basically, it's just a terrific film that a lot of people, of course, will have trouble with because it's not really story-driven.
Right.
It's by the wonderful filmmaker Kelly Reichardt, who made a film called Wendy and Lucy, also starring Michelle Williams.
Oh, really? Yeah.
And that's like one of my favorite films with her. She really is terrific. And it's good to see her in my movie Marilyn, just, you know, branch out and try something a little beyond her comfort zone. So, you know, I think the Academy is giving her a nod for that. Yeah.
What else was snubbed this year?
Oh, goodness gracious. Let's just go to the acting categories. We have Tilda Swinton.
Oh, my God, yes.
Who was terrific in We Need to Talk About Kevin. It's coming out in theaters locally in South Florida next Friday, a week from tomorrow.
Okay.
She plays the mother of a teenager who's accused of a Columbine-style massacre.
Right.
But it's really a portrait of her. And it's just really a terrific performance. The director is Lynn Ramsey, who's a bit of an acquired taste, but she is like her most accessible film. You know, you don't need to be in the art house circuit to appreciate this
right.
film. The other big, and I know you agree with me, the other big snub is Michael Fassbender.
Yes.
Who had a wonderful year, not just with Shame, which is the performance that would have probably got a nomination, but also he played the young Magneto in X-Men First Class.
And
so he went Mason away, and he made a wonderful Rochester in Jane Eyre, which is
right.
one of my favorite films of last year.
I know, and you know, the Jane Eyre films seem to always be snubbed.
Yeah.
You know, the period pieces have fallen out of favor for some reason, yet they make a pile of money.
I mean,
Jane Austen, the Austenites, they call them,
mm-hmm.
have, and I interviewed Lev Raphael, who is a modern day rewrite in her voice, a gay writer, and he writes a lot of, and he says this is huge, and of course Dangerous Method.
It was. I mean, I liked it. I didn't love it as much as you did, but
right.
it's a little bit of a more tasteful offering from David Cronenberg.
Right.
I really think he should go back to making something a little more twisted like he used to.
Yeah, this wasn't
yeah.
a twisted. This
no.
is a love story.
Yeah, it was a romantic triangle. But it does have one spanking scene where a fan spanks Keira Knightley.
Yeah, oh my God.
That's like a flash of the old Cronenberg that
right.
I know
he does
love.
It, he does it with gusto.
Yeah, he does.
He loves to.
Another big snub, before I get a chance, Michael Shannon, the actor from Boardwalk Empire,
okay.
terrific actor. He made a small film called Take Shelter, where he played a man, a construction worker in rural Ohio, who starts seeing visions, apocalyptic visions.
Oh, really?
Is he going insane, or this is really happening?
Uh-huh.
That's the question the movie asks. It's got that feel of an old Peter Weir film, like Picnic at Hanging Rock, or The Last Wave. And
okay.
it's a very, very unsettling film. And I really wish he had been nominated. He was really terrific in that. Probably my favorite female performance of last year was Elizabeth Olsen in Martha Marcy May Marlene.
Uh-huh.
Another movie that's very, very eerie about a runaway from a cult who's staying with her sister, and that she's been completely it's just been basically brainwashed, you know?
Uh-huh.
And it's just a terrific film.
Okay. All right, we have 90 seconds left. We need to talk about The Help.
We do.
We do need to talk about The Help. First of all, my haters guys in the Oscars said that they made Alfred Nobbs because The Help was getting too much money. That Alfred Nobbs is the white lesbian version of The Help.
Gender bending version, yeah.
The gender bending version
yeah.
of The Help. Except. And the controversy. I gave you a copy of The Help.
I read it, and I was enchanted with the book. I think it would have been better. The material would have been better served by like an HBO miniseries than a film. I think it's there's some really good things, elements in the film, but it's kind of lacks that day to day, the quotidian aspect
right.
of living. It really the book really captured what it probably felt like living in that period.
Right.
And I felt Whiplash effect, especially in the second half of the film. But I think it's really well acted. I think it's getting unfairly lambasted for you know, it's like another story of a white character, you know, saving African Americans.
Right.
It's more than that.
We have 10 seconds. Guess what we're going to eat right now, everyone that's watching The Help? We're going to eat chocolate cream pie.
Chocolate cream pie.
That's right. Listen, good night from Fort Lauderdale. Thank you, Ruben.
Good night, everyone. Good night.
Yay.